Well, hello. We're back. Radio. We're back. Sorry about that. We got disconnected by Blog Talk Radio, not by us. So, Rick, just keep on trucking.
So what I was leading up to is this. The devil claims authority over the people of the world, of Earth. That's what I said. The devil claims authority over the people of the world. Well, how can he do that? Well, first of all, he deceived the people from the first creation. Then God created the man, and from him took the woman and placed them in the garden, and they were to be his people. He had authority over them. The devil did not have authority over them. When the man and the woman listened to the serpent and then acted upon what he said, they submitted to his authority, and he had authority then over all the people of the earth. The plan that God has in place and has since this, well, he's had the plan forever, but it went into effect when the man and the woman submitted to the devil. They believed the devil's lie, and by acting on it in disobedience to God, they placed themselves under the devil. Now, because they had communicated directly, face-to-face with God, their disobedience was a defiance against God. And they knew full well what the penalty for defying God. They knew full well what it was, because the woman said to the devil, God said that if we ever ate from that tree, even if we touched it, we would be put to death. And the devil said, no, you will not be put to death. You'll become like gods. You see, gods are immortal. You understand what's going on here. God did not put the man and the woman to death on the day that they defied him and ate from the tree. So what happened? God had a process by which he could redeem the people of the earth. He would pay the price of death. His son would pay the price of death that was not paid by the man and the woman in the garden when they defied God and disobeyed him. That is why the blood of the lamb is key. But the blood of the lamb is not just the only thing needed, because the blood of the lamb opens the door to the kingdom of God. But God needs flesh and blood, human beings, in his kingdom. And that's why the other part of this is, by the witness of their sacrifice, their death, their blood. Because even in the face of death, they would not cling to life. Let the heavens rejoice and all who live there. Why? Because the devil no longer has access to the heavens. But for you, earth and sea, take note, earth and sea, trouble is coming. Because the devil has gone down to you in a rage, knowing that his days are numbered. Now, God, of course, knew how many days the devil had, and the devil knew how many days he had. What do you think the devil was looking for to happen? Let's turn to Daniel, chapter 2. You notice I go to Daniel chapter 2 a lot these days. I hadn't gone to Daniel 2 for this often in the last number of years. I use it a lot, but seems like I use Daniel 2 almost every time in our broadcast study. Daniel 2, as you know, is the dream vision of Nebuchadnezzar. And you know how it all transpired. Nebuchadnezzar was wondering what would become of this great empire that he had built and the beautiful palace and the hanging gardens and blah, blah, blah. And he kind of, I guess he fell asleep while he was going over all of this. And he had this dream and he recognized that the dream was more than just a dream. It had some significance. Now, why would God give Nebuchadnezzar the dream? He had Jeremiah the prophet in Jerusalem. He had a prophet. In fact, he probably had more than just Jeremiah. There was a prophet in Jerusalem, Jeremiah. Why didn't he give the vision to Jeremiah, his prophet? Why did he give it to this pagan king? Well, you say, well, Daniel was there. Well, yeah, Daniel was there. Was Daniel a prophet at the time?
No.
Daniel was one of the captives who was a member of the household, the royal household of Jerusalem and Judah, and he and his three friends had been picked because they were wise and young and strong and so on and so forth. They were to live in the palace of Nebuchadnezzar. Daniel's connection to all of this came because he, along with all the other quote-unquote wise men and magicians and et cetera, were scheduled to be executed because the resident wise man could not tell Nebuchadnezzar what his dream was. You see how God worked to bring Daniel into this? He knew that what Daniel would do. What did Daniel do? Daniel said to Arioch, "Let me pray to my God, and if he is willing, he will give me the answer to the king's question." We also know that Daniel is not a fabricated story, a myth from the Jews. We know that Josephus talks about how the prophecy of Daniel that the ram and the he-goat, which is in Daniel 8, was shown to Alexander the Great, which showed that the God of the heavens, the God of Israel, had shown Daniel in this vision that the Greek Empire, represented by the he-goat, would destroy the Persian Empire represented by the goat, the ram. And Alexander the Great, because of this, said that if Jerusalem would just equip his army with food and other necessities and pay a tax, he would leave them alone. And they did. Now, this is an external historical piece of evidence that would prove the existence of the prophecy of Daniel concerning Alexander the Great, and it would be then proof of the existence of Daniel. I want to draw your attention to the last part of this. I do want to say that this image that Nebuchadnezzar saw in his dream, this great imposing image of the various metals decreasing in value, is a representation of the kingdoms over which Satan had authority. They were all pagan kingdoms, and they had kings, but the kings were recognized as a son of the gods, and they were the gods' representatives to rule over these kingdoms. So the image represented the kingdoms over which the devil had authority. Down at the very end, this image had feet. These feet were a mixture of iron and baked clay or pottery. And we are told that in the days of the feet, in fact, let's read it, verse 33, while you were gazing, a stone broke away, untouched by any hand, and struck the statue, struck its feet of iron and earthenware, and shattered them. Now go to verse 44. In the time of these kings, that's the kings of the feet, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. And this kingdom will not pass into the hand of another race. It will shatter and absorb all the previous kingdoms and itself last forever. Just as you saw the stone, untouched by hand, break from the mountain and shatter iron, bronze, earthenware, silver, and gold, the great God has shown the king what is to take place. The dream is true and the interpretation exact. So given what I've just placed before you, what would the devil know? Confirm the fact that he was now on his way to perdition, that the one thing that God has needed since the man and the woman in the garden defied his command and disobeyed and were not put to death. What? Has God been trying to establish on this earth that he had to have before he could overthrow kingdom of the world ruled by the devil?
He had to have a kingdom, and not just any kingdom, a righteous kingdom.
Well, God doesn't have any other kind of a kingdom but a righteous kingdom.
Well, what I'm saying is perceptions are rampant today that God's kingdom is just like the kingdom of the world, except people believe.
Yes, it's within you. Well, it is within you, but not as they would, as they describe it. You see, what is different, though, now is that the man and the woman when they were placed in the garden, they were placed in the kingdom of God. They were separated from the world. God had separated a geographical area on the earth, and he had placed the man into this set-apart area that was separate from the rest of the earth. And they, the two in the garden were not blemished by lies from the devil, who had authority over the nations outside the garden. God allowed the devil to enter this garden and to test the man and the woman to see the strength of their soul. God does this with all those, but since the man and the woman succumbed to the lie of the devil, what is happening today is really a reverse of what happened there. Because we are all born into the kingdom of the world. None of us are born in the kingdom of God. None are born in the kingdom of God. You can read this in John chapter 3 in the Son of God's nighttime teaching session with Nicodemus. Very important to note, when you are born into the world, you are not born into the kingdom. You have to be born from above to enter the kingdom of God. So it is incumbent upon all of us to learn how we can be born from above. And it's simple, baptism, which prepares you for your spiritual baptism. Baptism is an enactment of being born, where you are placed under the water and then you come up out of the water. So you're born of the water and then you're born of the Spirit. And how that happens is that your spirit, which is your intellect, your mind, your soul, your heart, all of those terms that define it, what it is what you have allowed to stay in your mind. The words, primarily it's words. Words will be our judge in the judgment. It was words that caused the man and the woman in the garden to act in defiance against the command that God had given them. Now you think about it. What if they had remained honest to themselves, knowing that God would never lie to them, and they would say, "Get out of the garden, you have no business here," instead of, be like gods? Huh. Not be put to death? Well, that's even better. Huh. I have heard this question asked in various sermons and discussions and studies of the dream vision of Nebuchadnezzar. Where is Israel? There's this image, and they're all pagan empires. Where is Israel? Israel is not there. And the reason that Israel is not there, what did God require from Israel? I'm talking about the children of Israel that he never got.
The keeping of the commandments, the doing of his will.
The completing of the sanctification process, right. Which is exactly what you're talking about. Completing the sanctification process, becoming a righteous nation, a righteous kingdom. God needed a righteous kingdom. He couldn't use a kingdom that had some righteous and some not righteous, or you know, some almost there or and some hardly there, to defeat a kingdom that was in the same condition they were. In fact, he kept notifying them through his prophets that they were behaving just like the nations around them, and not like one that had been called to become a holy people.
Set apart.
So I've read many times the statement, the king, the heavenly king, made to the religious leaders of the Jews after he told them the parable of the tenants in the field and how the builders rejected the stone. The builders rejected the stone, which was in Psalms. He said, time is up. What was that connected to, or was that connected to anything? Well, it was connected to Daniel chapter 9, the 70 weeks. Now, most Protestant scholars and preachers and most Protestants who delve into prophecy, they see the prophecy of the 70 weeks as one that 69 weeks happen, and then the 70th week is taken down to the end of days. And there's this seven-year period at the end of days where all this great tribulation, everything works out, you know, and Israel is there, and the Gog and Magog and blah, blah, blah. Just turn on any YouTube channel or you're going to hear. And the question is this: when God gives a defined amount of time that you need to accomplish something within, and then he goes, well, didn't do it, so I'm gonna take that last little week, I'm gonna take that off so they don't run out of time, and I'm gonna put it down at the end. Then how is it the 70th week?
How can God divide prophetic time and still have the prophecy hold? He can't.
But you see, they don't understand. This is what the devil wants. This is what the devil wants, because he can work with people who are trying to make things fit into a prophecy that were never there to begin with. What we need to do is look at Daniel 2 and the stone. Because the stone is not God's kingdom that was in captivity during the time of Nebuchadnezzar in Babylon. If it was, then the stone would have appeared at that time. It wasn't there during the time of Medo-Persia or Greece or Rome. In fact, the kingdom that was in existence at the time of the Roman Empire is when the king of that kingdom came and they said, you're not our king. We don't want you as our king. And they condemned him to death. So he didn't have a kingdom there. He didn't have a kingdom all the way through the legs of iron. He didn't have a kingdom until the feet were already in existence, and then in the days of those kings, the God in the heavens set up a kingdom, a stone that cut itself from the mountain, which we will talk about tomorrow.
Thank you, Rick. That was a fabulous study. We encourage you to listen to both of these studies, one right after the other. We're sorry about the glitch that occurred. We will see you all tomorrow. Our program will start again at 10 a.m. Pacific time. And it is the Revelation of Jesus with Rick Sterling. Please go to our Facebook page and read the latest posting by Rick. And we also encourage you to go to our websites at spiritoftruthministry.net and spiritoftruthministry.net/SCM. On behalf of Spirit of Truth Ministry, this is just wishing you all a good day. We'll see you all tomorrow. So long for now.